Welcome to another edition of Building Tech Talk. We're here once again with our resident experts, Scott Jenkins and Dr. Doug Brown from ZS2 Technologies. And we're joined today by Chelsea Earhart, who is a environmental products trader. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. So today we want to talk about the carbon economy. And I'm going to be the first one to raise my hand and say I'm clueless on this topic. So this is going to be really interesting that we're all going to get a little bit of an education here today. And so I thought to start off with, Chelsea, could you just give us a little bit of an outline of what you do and how the carbon economy works?
Yeah, well, I'll give you an insight to just my small piece. I always say that I was into carbon offsets before carbon offsets were cool. They seem to have become very in vogue in the last 18 months or so as we try to rebuild after COVID and everybody wants to do it the green way. So carbon offsets can be either compliance or voluntary credits. So a compliance credit means that there's a program that the government requires in industrials to reduce their emissions. And they can do that by reducing on site, changing their processes, capturing carbon, et cetera, but they can rarely get down to zero. And so what you have is a third party that is not regulated. It can be an agricultural sector, it could be a wind farm, fuel switching, energy efficiency, green building, where you do some where your project does some kind of reduction from the baseline and to either avoid carbon, sequester carbon biologically, which is in the case of forestry, or destroy the carbon, which would be the case of ODS projects, for example. So refrigerants, that kind of thing. And then what they do is they go through, they do a year or so of reporting, and then they get that verified and quantified. And that's where I step in, is once the carbon offset has been quantified by an expert, then they're serialized and they go onto a carbon registry. And you can look at them, you can read about the project, you can see who owns them. And so I would purchase them at that point. And I manage a portfolio. So our portfolio has offsets across Canada. We have some in, you know, forests in BC. We have some biomass projects in Ontario, landfill gas, wind projects, the whole gamut across Canada, a number in the US. We've recently been procuring credits in Brazil and Cambodia. So this is a huge, huge industry. And what it effectively works on is the idea of an externality. So I'll use an example of green building to describe the externality. When you build a conventional building, there's an inherent carbon footprint associated with that. And that would have a cost on society because we know that climate change is creating a lot of problems for adaptation and health and likewise. And if you build a green building, then that carbon footprint could be zero or negative. So a carbon offset is essentially that delta. And what you want to do is you want to monetize that externality because it's probably going to cost a little bit more to go the green path than to go the conventional path. But that extra reduction has a value. And my role is to take that value and monetize it and find people who would like to pay for that externality, who would like to pay to cover that reduction. And so the kinds of companies that we find are in one of two buckets, and it depends on your project type. So there's compliance entities. These are, think about oil and gas companies that are required to reduce their emissions. So they have to buy credits. And so we sell to those. And there's also voluntary buyers, which is what this whole big green revolution that is going bananas right now, where every day people want to buy carbon offsets. And that's the voluntary piece. And that's where you have corporations. In the news, we hear a lot about Microsoft. We hear a lot about Google. These types of companies that are just saying, we're going to voluntarily, without the stick of the government, buy these credits and reduce our emissions. And it's very popular. Every single day we're hearing about new companies. Industrials too coming out saying they're going to be net zero, and that's what carbon offsets are used for.
The one thing, you know, really looking forward to having you on our podcast, and again, thanks mom, dad, Doug's mom and dad for listening. You know, we have a very big audience, but I wanted to ask you about being here in Alberta. So as many people think of Alberta and Western Canada, you know, we have a huge energy economy. There's a big piece of our economy, but you're a carbon trader, you're monetizing these deltas here in Alberta, and you know how that sort of plays into it versus, you know, other jurisdictions in the world, like maybe think of California or I don't know, even in Eastern Canada, are they ahead of us? It sounds like they're not. Like you're based here in Calgary, Alberta.
Yeah. So fun little fact is Alberta was the first jurisdiction I think, in North America to have a compliance carbon trading program that was done under a conservative government. It started in 2007. And back then, you were allowed to use 100% offsets to meet your compliance obligation if you were, you know, Shell, NMAX, TransAlta Capital Power, Suncor, name it, all the energy companies. So all these companies are very, very well versed in carbon offsets, and they've been doing it for a very long time.
That's amazing.
And so, yeah. And then so when California started their program, I think in 2010, around there, a lot of us that were doing carbon desks here, we just naturally started trading the carbon offsets in California, and then California linked to Quebec. So now you have this whole broad range. But yeah, Alberta actually has a number of carbon trading desks here.
Chelsea, could you explain a little bit about carbon credits and what that actually means, like from a physical carbon standpoint, and if there's an element of psychology in, you know, a carbon credit that maybe one person would produce over another, and how that affects like the trading market?
Yeah. So our carbon credits are not all created equal, and they're not all the same. So what you really want to think about in the first instance is additionality. So would the reduction have occurred without the carbon credit? So the idea that there's this externality that costs more, you want to make sure that your payment, if you really want the best credit, you want to make sure your payment is really creating the reduction. So I'll give an example to make this clear. If there is a hydro dam that was built in 1973, and you tell me you're going to sell me a carbon credit from that was produced last year. So the hydro dam has been producing clean electricity since 1973. Last year in 2020, it also produced green electricity, and you're going to sell me a carbon credit from that. Do we believe that was really an additionality thing? Or did we build that hydro dam in 1973 for other reasons, nothing to do with carbon? Now, if you tell me you have a carbon capture and storage project that's going to cost $100 a ton to reduce carbon, and I say, okay, well, I'll pay you $100 for that carbon reduction, well, yeah, then my payment is making that project happen. You're truly changing behavior. You're truly changing the business as usual course. So we always think about what's the trajectory of carbon for our society or for our country or jurisdiction. Is my payment really changing that trajectory? Am I really reducing it? So the credits that have the best additionality case, those are really important. So, and the second part of it is people like charismatic carbon offsets. So for example, if I'm selling...
This will be interesting.
Yeah, if I'm selling your corporation a carbon credit that you can take your CEO... The example I always use is a beautiful rainforest. So your CEO can fly there. You can walk through the initial part where, you know, children are being read to, women have jobs. There's an ability to stand next to a big giant tree that's the size of a house and hug it. Then, you know, you feel like that's a really special marketing piece. So that would be a very charismatic project. A less charismatic project might be a landfill. So, you know, there's a landfill gas project. People don't necessarily... They have trouble getting their head around that or seeing it as beneficial. But truthfully, it might actually be a better reduction because it's very additional. And then in the middle ground, there's kind of like what I call the new vintage ones. So they would be projects that are maybe smaller volumes. They have a new start date. So they were started in the last couple of years. So we know that they are really being funded by this carbon economy. So the truth is, when people are going for net zero or carbon neutrality, whatever their goal is, they are going to probably look for a portfolio. They're going to want some cost mitigation ones. So maybe some cheaper ones, the landfill gas credit ones that are maybe a dollar or so. They're going to want something charismatic to put on their ESG report. And they might want something in the middle just to make sure that their claims are really additional, really solid.
So you know, you've used the term portfolio a lot, your job and putting together this portfolio and all of the experience here. Is it, you know, going to be the finance guy here, you know, go back a long time ago, but is it really then you're also potentially bringing multiple projects together and then bundling them, much like somebody would in a financial investment, like an ETF or a mutual fund, and then you're then selling that or trading that to somebody who wants, yes, I want 10% of my carbon to be from this type, the tree in the Brazilian rainforest. I want 25% to be real, like this project wouldn't have happened. And then the rest can be just the highest, you know, reduction of carbon, but maybe it's not sexy. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, that's a lot of what I recommend to people is to find a variety or try to find one that's in the same jurisdiction as them or the same industry as them and that kind of thing. So yeah, that's why I think green building would be really interesting, because we know that a lot of emissions come from building. And so someone who's trying to make sure that their, you know, their buildings are green, well, they might not be building a new facility, but they could buy some green building voluntary offsets, that kind of thing. So yeah, I try to manage a portfolio that's diverse, one, because of the risks. You know, credits, offset credits have been historically, there's been some problems around fraud, or maybe there could be a reversal, or could be something just accidental where the wrong emissions intensity was used and there's a reduction. So we like to diversify in case of a reversal. Also, we like to have it because I don't know what customers are coming next. And now that carbon offsets are not just in the energy industry, we had, like I said, we had so many in gas and power and crude, but now we're getting people asking from all kinds of industries. So trying to fit everybody's unique need, you know, you want to be something to everyone.
Right.
Chelsea, one more question. How is a carbon credit affected by different countries and jurisdictions pinning a price to the value of an emission of, say, a ton of CO2?
So, yeah, I mean, it depends. If it's, for example, in Canada, we know Justin Trudeau's saying that there's going to be $170 a ton by 2030. Now, that is a compliance credit. So I guess I should have said in the beginning, offsets can fall into two buckets. One is compliance and one is voluntary. Compliance means that you are required by law to reduce your emissions. And I think that's what Justin Trudeau is referring to. So if you fit one of the protocols that's for compliance, then in December, when the Alberta government is likely going to announce that they'll increase the carbon price from 40 to 50, and they may do a longer trajectory, then your compliance credits will increase in value. Now, how that affects the voluntary market is a little bit more indirect, because companies are now all trying to fight to get all the voluntary credits they can, because everyone's going to net zero and they're worried there won't be enough credits. So the announcements are more when they make their NDC contributions and, you know, when they do the Paris agreements. And so the more stringent those goals are, then the higher the voluntary credits would become.
All right. So really you just said something that was really interesting to me, is that there's, on the voluntary side, it sounds like this probably isn't the right, you know, phrase, but there's a gold rush going on right now. And so the value of those voluntary credits, because there's a scarcity of supply.
Yeah, of good credits. I mean, if you, like I said, we got to remember about additionality. If you don't care about additionality, there's lots of credits in the world. But if you really want high quality credits that are, you know, that are a newer vintage, new project, yeah, there's definitely a gold rush. I mean, I'll give you an example. I was on maternity leave and I just got back on May 31st. We bought some voluntary credits. They were $3.50. That was in mid-June. Today, so on the CME is the exchange, there's now voluntary credits are trading in the futures. They're trading like $7.70. Wow. So that's just from mid-June to now.
A double.
Yeah, a double. And this is just out of nowhere. This is just people, they want to buy everything.
Right. Well, we've seen, and Doug, you brought it to my attention, we've seen some interesting things in the press from some large companies out there that for marketing, for brand, are doing this, and they're going and they're making innovative deals with young companies that have technologies that are obviously going to reduce, but are still unproven. So they're almost, well, what you sent me recently and some stuff is, it's almost like they're front running what's coming for companies that are developing these innovative technologies. So that's fascinating to me as well.
Absolutely.
So I think we'll see that more.
So super relevant to Alberta, where we're located, how do you view EOR in a form of a credit? Is that something that you've traded, or is it able to be traded?
That's funny that you ask about EOR. Yeah, I mean, EOR is really important credit for Alberta. It's a big one. There's the big Quest project you talk about with Shell. Mm-hmm. Those credits are on the Alberta registry. You can see those. Those are compliance credits. So those are an important way for large facilities in Alberta to meet their compliance. In addition, you have also the carbon trunk line. So you've got credits from Nutrium and Northwest Refining. Those are coming through as compliance credits. So those are very important. And they will likely benefit if the Alberta government increases the price from 40 to 50 to follow Justin Trudeau's timeline. So the big thing with EOR in Alberta is, and Saskatchewan as well, it's the before and after. So older projects, they're just going to go into the voluntary, and that's where that additionality comes into question. You know, if you were doing enhanced oil recovery, like I said, in the 90s or the 80s, and I told you the carbon program didn't start until 2007, you know, how additional is that? But if you're saying I can build a carbon capture and storage facility like Quest and I need carbon credits to make that economical, well, that's definitely additional.
So it's going into the economic model for this new project, you know, for the enhanced oil recovery project.
Yeah. So I think we have a huge opportunity in Alberta to do carbon capture and storage on all of our industrial processes, not just oil and gas.
So just to bring this back a little bit to the carbon economy 101, kind of just to clarify. So if you're making a sustainable decision in a project, whether it's a building project or any project, that has a value to other companies who want to buy that reputation. Is that a fair way to put that, where they're saying, you've made this decision, I want to compensate you for making that decision and bring that into our company as we are saying that we're supporting what you're doing? Is that kind of a simple way to put it?
Yeah, definitely. If there's a reduction from the baseline, so there's, like I said, the conventional scenario, conventional buildings, are able to reduce that or do a different process where you're reducing emissions and you're able to properly verify that, quantify it, and come up with a number, then there are, it's a gold rush for how many people would want to buy that reduction and use it against their own emissions.
So basically responsible decisions now have a value.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a market where they can be monetized.
How many people are you finding are actually realizing this and taking advantage of this carbon economy right now?
I personally don't see a lot of green building credits out there, but I think that there's an opportunity to start monetizing them and marketing them. And I think they would be popular because, like I said, we see building emissions as a huge, huge part of the greenhouse gas equation. And I don't know that there's a lot of ways to get at them without, if you're not planning to tear down the building and start again, you're going to have to use offsets, is kind of my point, because that's the purpose of offsets. You do everything you can to get there in terms of your process, but at the very end, you definitely need to use offsets. So I could see a really good trade between those who are making these decisions and doing the reduction to those who need to buy offsets to get to their goals.
Well, we were having a conversation earlier, you know, when you joined us before we started the podcast, about some of these large, multinational, world-famous technology companies, some of whom we now know because they've knocked on our door, about them really realizing there's a shift from not just operational carbon of buildings, so heating and cooling, massive costs, but now the embodied carbon of the materials they're using and them taking a much more holistic. And I think the building industry is next up. We know the cement industry is next up and people realizing how much CO2 or greenhouse gases are produced from traditional cement, Portland cements, but building materials overall, so not just cement. Because buildings, like, you know, we keep constructing them, right? And I would also say, interesting, because you've done a great job explaining that there's the voluntary bucket, but then there's a compliance bucket. We're seeing across Canada and the United States, the building code's changing, that now the building code is really starting to focus, and the new national building code in Canada this fall will have the most energy related or efficiency provisions in it that it's ever had. Whereas before it was more maybe structural or, you know, make sure you don't get electrocuted or cause floods from your plumbing and wet materials. So performance-based, now they're really thinking about energy use. And then we've seen it here in Calgary, actually, the building code in Calgary changed on January 1st. It's very helpful, but they're starting to think along these lines, which it's such a natural for what you've already been doing. So I think I would challenge you that your next set of huge clients out there might be construction companies, builders, developers. I think not just the oil and gas folks or energy folks.
Yeah.
So what's the first step for a company who isn't involved in this at all? They are making responsible decisions and they're not realizing any benefit from it right now. What's their first step to get involved in this and start kind of going down that road to start getting some return on that responsible investment?
Yeah, I think that for any offset project, it's the same sort of life cycle. So you have a project developer that would probably be the owner of the building or the builder, that kind of thing, or could be the producer of the product, as we talked about earlier. You identify the project developer, and then what you need to do is work with a verifier. And the verifier will work with you at the beginning of the process to help set the boundaries of the project, identify the protocol because offsets are very prescriptive. It's really a big data management game. And so you identify your project boundary. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to reduce emissions from a baseline. And then you track that data for the time period, typically a year. And at the end of the year, you work with the verifier to say, yeah, we use the right emission factors. We collected data appropriately. We have all the evidences, receipts to prove that this activity was done. The verifier might go to a site visit, likely come to your offices. And then after that, your offsets become serialized. And that's where someone like myself gets involved and helps get those to market.
Fantastic. Any other thoughts, comments, gentlemen?
We were joking earlier that we think for all our building tech talk podcasts, I truly believe this is the most fascinating guest we've had on yet. And I'm not saying that because you're sitting right beside me, but I can't thank you enough because I think this is the way the world's going and you're already there.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to come in. Your company is very exciting, very dynamic. I learned a lot more about cement than I ever thought I would know. So that was very interesting as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Chelsea from Elbow River Marketing. Thank you very much for joining us on Building Tech Talk. And be sure to tune in next time. Ring the bell, subscribe on YouTube, and also subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And we'll see you next time.